If you take a cup of hot tea and just, you know, drop in a spoonful of sugar, it dissolves.
Right, just instantly.
Yeah, the heat and the liquid do all the work, and you get this perfect solid solution. It's easy, it's natural. But imagine needing to mix two solid materials together, like a metal and a highly stable ceramic.
Which is incredibly difficult.
Exactly. Because if you apply heat to melt them, you completely ruin the recipe. The ingredients separate, or, you know, one gets totally destroyed. And you obviously can't just take a spoon and stir a pot of solid metal.
Right. I mean, that presents a massive roadblock for materials engineering. For the longest time, the limitations of melting basically dictated what alloys we could actually create.
Well, today on this deep dive, we are exploring the brutal, fascinating world of mechanical alloying. It's a process where scientists literally bash solid metals into atomic submission.
Bashing is definitely the right word for it.
Yeah. We're going to discover how this sheer physical trauma challenges the fundamental laws of thermodynamics and how it creates these supermaterials that might actually prevent nuclear meltdowns. It really is wild. And our foundation for this comes from the Van Horn Distinguished Lecture by HKDH Padeshia. It's called The Evolution of Solutions. And we're also looking at his accompanying thermodynamic research paper. I promise you, by the end of this deep dive, you will never look at a piece of wire, or even just the concept of mixing things, the same way again.
Yeah, it completely flips our understanding of how matter behaves under extreme duress. So to understand why scientists started, violently bashing metals together, we have to look back at 1970.
Right, the INCO Project.
Exactly. There was this researcher named Benjamin working at INCO, and he wanted to create incredibly stable, creep-resistant alloys, basically iron and nickel-based metals that wouldn't deform under extreme stress.
And to do that, he wanted to introduce these microscopic, highly stable yttrium oxide particles into the metal.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
historically they tried using thorium for that.
But thorium is radioactive,
Yeah.
so that's a total non-starter for, you know, everyday commercial engineering.
Exactly. So yttrium oxide was the perfect non-radioactive alternative. But Benjamin ran into that melting problem you mentioned.
Ah, right.
If you melt the metal to mix in the yttrium oxide, the oxide is so stable it just refuses to melt. It literally floats right up to the top.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's basically like trying to bake chocolate chip cookies, right?
That's a great way to think about it.
You want the chocolate chips suspended everywhere in the dough,
Right.
but if you heat the dough to a liquid state just to make stirring easier, the chips melt and totally ruin the structure.
Yeah, you just get a puddle of chocolate.
Right. So instead, you decide to just hit the solid ingredients with a hammer until they are perfectly blended.
Which sounds insane, but that is exactly what they did. Benjamin used a ball mill. You take the metal powders, you throw in the yttrium oxide, and you put them in this massive rotating drum.
And the key ingredient is what they put inside the drum with the powder.
Exactly. Hard cast iron balls. You just rotate the drum, and these heavy balls violently crash into each other, trapping the powder in between.
Wow. So it's just relentlessly beating the elements into a solid solution, and they don't use any heat at all.
Zero heat. It's pure physical trauma. The metals cold weld together, fracture apart, and cold weld again over and over.
That sounds brutal.
It is. But that violent manufacturing process is necessary because these materials are heading into environments that are just as brutal.
Like processing biological waste at super high temperatures. I read they use these mechanically alloyed pipes because they need the grains to wrap around the circumference.
Yeah, to resist hoop stress, that outward pressure trying to burst the pipe.
But the most mind-blowing application has to be nuclear fusion reactors.
Oh, absolutely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where mechanical alloying saves the day. Inside a fusion reactor, the environment is so intense that you get literal transmutation.
Wait, like alchemy?
Exactly like alchemy.
Yeah.
Fast neutrons bombard the steel walls, and they hit the iron atoms so hard they transmute them into helium.
So you're just suddenly generating a noble gas inside a solid metal wall. That gas has to go somewhere, right?
It does. It migrates through the steel, finds little microscopic empty spaces, and forms helium bubbles. And over the life of the reactor, these bubbles grow, causing the steel to physically swell up.
Which is terrifying. Because swelling causes things like the catastrophic nuclear accidents we saw in the past, like the early Windscale fire.
Right. Containing that helium is literally a matter of global safety. And this is where Benjamin's yttrium oxide particles come in. Padeshia uses a brilliant balloon analogy for this in his lecture.
Oh, yeah, the balloon analogy is great. Walk us through that.
So when a balloon is really small, It takes an enormous amount of pressure to start blowing it up, Brooke.
Yeah, your cheeks hurt trying to get that first breath in.
Exactly. But once it's large, it's super easy to keep inflating. Well, bubbles in metal work the same way. By mechanically alloying millions of tiny, ultra-stable oxide particles into the steel, they act as tiny anchors.
So instead of a few massive bubbles, the helium forms around these millions of tiny nucleation sites.
Yes. And because the bubbles are forced to stay tiny, their internal pressure is incredibly high. They can safely hold way more helium gas without causing the surrounding steel to swell.
Wow. So this brutally smashed metal is the key to safely housing fusion energy, an environment that, creates 200 displacements per atom over its lifetime.
Yeah, the radiation literally knocks every single atom out of its place 200 times, and the material still survives.
Okay, that sounds amazing in theory. But how do scientists actually prove that a ball mill created a true atomic solution? Like, why isn't it just a really tiny mixed-up salad of different metals?
That's the million-dollar question. To prove it, they have to use something called an atom probe. It's essentially time-of-flight mass spectroscopy.
Right, where they make a sharp needle out of the metal.
Exactly. They make an impossibly sharp needle, apply a massive electrical field, and literally pull individual atoms off the tip one by one.
Wait, really? One atom at a time?
One at a time. And they measure how fast the atom flies to a detector to identify what element it is. It magnifies the material 10 million times.
That is absurd.
It's incredible. So they pull off about 50 atoms at a time to check the concentration and see if it's truly mixed.
But wait, I have to jump in here with a critical question based on the lecture. They used a political analogy to explain a problem with this, right?
Yeah, they did.
Like, if you take a tiny sample of 50 atoms, the concentration is going to fluctuate. To use their example, and we are totally neutral here, just reporting what the source says.
Right, just explaining the math.
Yeah. If you take a random poll of four people in the USA, and you get three Republicans and one Democrat, that doesn't mean the whole country is exactly 75% Republican.
Right, of course not.
And it definitely doesn't mean the whole country is physically segregated into these neat 3-to-1 clusters. It's just a tiny sample size. So if these 50-atom polls keep fluctuating, doesn't that prove it is not a perfectly homogeneous mixture?
That is exactly the hurdle they faced. Because a perfectly uniform mixture, where every 50-atom lock is perfectly identical, completely violates the laws of probability.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so to prove a random atomic solution, they couldn't look for uniformity. They had to compare their real atom probe polls to a computer-generated binomial distribution. Basically, a model of perfect mathematical randomness.
And how did the data look?
The curves match perfectly. The ball mill genuinely created a true, mathematically random, solid solution.
Okay, since we've proven it's a true solution, we have to look at the physics of why the atoms stay mixed. Because if there's no heat melting them together, why don't they just clump back up?
That brings us to thermodynamics, specifically the concept of entropy. Nature favors disorder simply because it's more probable.
Right, like the analogy of a cylinder of gas. It is technically possible that all the gas atoms spontaneously move to the left half of the cylinder at the exact same moment.
Technically possible, but ridiculously improbable.
Exactly. The dispersed, chaotic state is just mathematically way more likely.
And the guy who figured out the math for that probability was Ludwig Boltzmann. He derived the equation S equals K log W. It's so fundamental, it's actually carved onto his gravestone.
Which is such a tragic historical detail. Because he actually committed suicide, right?
He did, yeah.
And it was because the scientific community at the time just relentlessly bullied him and didn't believe in the particulate nature of matter. They didn't even believe atoms existed.
It's heartbreaking. But today, Padecia's paper adapts Boltzmann's exact equation. Now, normally, that equation is for single atoms mixing in a gas. But in mechanical alloying, you're starting with giant lumps of powder.
Millions of atoms in a single chunk.
Right. So the math has to ask, at what size do these chunks get small enough to actually start feeling each other's presence thermodynamically?
So what does this all mean? The math is saying mixing isn't just an on or off switch.
Exactly.
It's a spectrum. It depends on how small the powder chunks get. What's the threshold where they start interacting?
The math shows it happens when the particles are bashed down to about 1,000 atoms in size. That creates a driving force of about 10 joules per mole.
But wait, this brings up the massive paradox that the research paper uncovers.
Yes, the interface paradox.
If you keep breaking particles smaller and smaller, you are creating more and more surface area, right?
Every time a particle breaks, you create a new boundary. And every interface between different metal particles has what we call interfacial energy.
Because it's a defect, the atomic lines don't match up.
Exactly. And the math dictates that as a particle size shrinks closer to a single atom, the amount of surface area per unit volume shoots toward infinity.
Which means the energy cost shoots toward infinity. If the energy cost is infinite, mechanical alloying should be thermodynamically impossible. It should hit a total brick wall.
And what's fascinating here is how the material solves this. You have to think of normal particle growth or nucleation in reverse.
Okay, reverse nucleation. Walk me through that.
Normally, when a tiny particle grows inside a metal, it starts out coherent, meaning its atomic lattice perfectly lines up with the surrounding metal. But as it gets bigger, the physical strain becomes too much and the borders get messy. It becomes incoherent.
So the energy spikes.
Right. Now, mechanical alloying runs that backward. You start with big, messy, incoherent powder chunks.
And as you smash them smaller and smaller with the ball mill,
the surface area and the energy go through the roof until they eventually get so microscopically small, they literally cannot survive the internal strain anymore.
Oh, wow. So they are forced to become coherent.
Yes. The atoms literally snap into perfect alignment with each other. And the second they do, that infinite interface energy just drops to zero.
That is mind-bending. You literally have to push the material over an activation energy barrier with just sheer physical force until it clicks into perfect atomic alignment.
Exactly. It's bullied into perfection.
Well, this physical trauma doesn't just happen in high-tech lab equipment. It actually happens in extreme everyday environments, too.
Oh, yeah. Think about train wheels.
Right. The lecture mentions that when train wheels repeatedly run over steel rails, that extreme, relentless pressure actually mechanically alloys the surface of the track.
It creates a homogeneous zone so tough that if you put it under a microscope, you can't even etch it with chemicals to see the structure.
Unetchable armor. But here's where it gets really interesting. There's a commercial example that blew my mind. The wire they use for cutting solid silicon wafers.
Oh, the Cypher Scientific iron.
Yes. They start with a dual-phase steel, right? Ferrite and martensite. And they take just 50 grams of it. 50 grams.
A tiny handful.
And they pull it through dies, stretching it until it becomes a wire 2 kilometers long.
Which is just a brutal amount of stretching. And that physical trauma mechanically alloys the two phases together.
And the resulting wire is 5.5 gigapascals strong. It's 8 denier thick, which is literally thinner than the thread of a nylon stocking.
But the crazy part is, unlike carbon fiber, which would just snap, this perfectly mixed atomic solution is incredibly ductile. You can actually tie a knot in it.
Tying a knot in a steel wire thinner than a hair that can cut through silicon, it's magic.
Well, it's just physics pushed to the absolute limit, which actually reminds me of the humorous historical anecdote Podestia shared about William Coolidge.
Oh, yeah, the tungsten guy.
Right. Coolidge invented this severe deformation process to make tungsten ductile. Tungsten is normally super brittle, so he gets a patent. General Electric gives him a massive corporate medal. It's a huge deal.
But then he loses the patent.
Yeah, because during a lawsuit, someone proved that tungsten was actually already naturally ductile if it's in a single crystal form. Coolidge hadn't invented a new property. He just mechanically forced messy polycrystalline tungsten to mimic a perfect single crystal.
And he gave his GE corporate medal back out of pure integrity because he realized he didn't fundamentally change the element. He just bullied it into behaving.
Just like the ball mill bullies the powder.
It's incredible.
Eh.
So just to recap all this, Benjamin's quest for an unmeltable alloy led to a process of sheer physical trauma, a process that forces atoms over an impossible energy barrier into a perfectly coherent solution.
And that brute force is what gives us nuclear safety shields and incredibly strong wires today.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a really provocative thought from the very end of the lecture. It goes back to entropy. Podestia mentions Claude Shannon, the father of information theory.
Right, the guy who invented the math for digital data streams.
Yeah. And when Shannon derived his equation for data, it was mathematically identical to Boltzmann's equation for thermodynamic entropy. Shannon famously used the word entropy for data because a colleague told him nobody understands it anyway.
Which is hilarious, but deeply profound.
It is. Because in materials, perfect atomic randomness, maximum entropy, creates the most stable, indestructible, unetchable mechanical alloys. Nature heavily favors that noise.
Right. It's the most thermodynamically stable state.
So if we apply this to information theory, If noise, or maximum entropy, is the most thermodynamically stable state of data, are perfectly ordered digital systems fundamentally fragile? Think about it. Are our massive databases destined by the unyielding laws of physics to eventually degrade into random noise simply because it is the most stable state of the universe?
That is a terrifying thought for anyone in IT.
Definitely something for you to ponder the next time you save a file. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the brutal world of mechanical alloying. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and we'll catch you next time.